really having in mind here with this type of astrology. Then we'll do a break, and then we'll turn it over to Kaylin to begin the intro material on the just really basics, like 101. So this is actually now my 43rd year of me having an astrological practice. I was fortunate enough to be in college in the late 60s. And that was the time period in history when it was actually pretty well accepted that getting like a liberal arts education was what you did, or a university was, in order to gain universal knowledge and expanded awareness and impact of something which hardly anybody remembers from those days, is that if you happen to be in college in those days at the time of the cultural revolutions that were happening at that point, that there was only one major you could have that was considered lower or at the same level of the totem pole as being a phys ed major. Now, this is nothing to do, no criticism of phys ed majors, but as far as like you go to college for, you don't have to go to classes so much, you know. So there's the only other thing that was that low on the totem pole is if you couldn't make it in any other major, then you would get a business major. That was considered to be the lowest echelon. Boys that ever turned around. It just changed like crazy. But anyway, I was really fortunate in those years that I was had a double major in philosophy and East Asian studies. And then about the late 60s, early 70s, I became involved in the Transcendental Meditation Organization. So I was sort of doing the meditational Eastern approach as well as philosophy. But when, in 1969, I met a woman who was an astrologer. And she was my girlfriend for a while. And I asked her if I could be her apprentice. And strangely, and I still cannot totally understand this, she trained me in a particular way that actually, this is way before it became shamanic astrology, in a way that has served me since 69, 1970, which is a way of looking at the chart, which we still do big time in shamanic astrology, about how we look at the moon and how we look at the rising sign, which is considerably different than mainstream astrology. And it's never really failed me in looking at it this particular way. Anyway, so at the same time, I became a student of a man named Dane Rajar, who was a seminal figure in the late 60s. He was, at that point, in his 60s. And many young people were really into him big time. I mean, he sort of is the leader of the astrological renaissance that was happening at that point, where the great majority of people who were astrologers were in their early 20s. It was just a major movement at that point, together with the women's movement, gay liberation, as well as the political revolution that was happening at the time. And so I studied with him. That was the form of astrology known as humanistic astrology. And there was an organization at that point that I was part of, the original group. And meanwhile, all through the 70s, I was a TM teacher. And I lived in Asia, Thailand, Singapore, and Malaysia. But in the TM organization, astrology was considered to be thumbs down. So we had to do astrology underground because Maharishi didn't like astrology. And by the time I reached about age 27, which is the nodal reversal, one of the most important cycles that we can go through, I became extremely disgruntled with the guru, with Eastern systems, and I was really lost, completely and totally lost. And at that point, went back to the United States from Asia. And by the time of my Saturn return, and in my early 30s, I became interested in an Earth-based approach. And I went. I met a woman named Joan Halifax, who at that point was the leader of the Ojai Foundation. Before she got into Buddhism, she was a shamanic practitioner. She basically survived her. she was recovering from her experiences with doing LSD every week with her former husband and got into shamanism. And she was leading a vision quest group up to Mount Shasta. And this was 1979, and I went on that group, and I had a near-death experience, some hypothermia on the mountain, and went alone up on the top of a high ridge in Mount Shasta. And that's where a new transmission for me came through, which was, if you're going to do astrology, why not do the night sky? In fact, not only that, take people and put them on the ground and be under the sky, get away from the cities, get away from their normal routines, and reconnect them elementally to the sky and the land. And so for a couple of years then, I studied with different Native American Vision Quest teachers and then began experimenting with taking people out to a place. And I've, up on the altar there on the far left is... the person I mentioned, the person, the rock that became my teacher. And I went out to the Wonderland of Rocks, and it was the full moon of January, and I think 1981. It was the Magi full moon, the closest full moon to Christmas. And I was out with that rock, and the rock spoke. He said, come and study with me one weekend a month per year. And I was living in L.A. at that point. So this is a great excuse to get out of Los Angeles. So I started going out to Joshua Tree every one weekend a month. Then I started taking friends in small groups out there, and that was the original, that was the beginning of what became shamanic astrology. At that point, we were calling it the Astrological Vision Quest. And later it became, after I met Kaylin, it became the Shamanic Astrology Mystery School. And so since those years, in experimenting with this, taking people into sacred sites, taking them on the ground, putting them on the ground, doing a more experiential form of astrology, we got to practice in a lot of the different techniques that have been woven into this particular system. I'm a Capricorn moon, and one of the things we Capricorn moons love doing is researching. And so a good portion of what I do is research. And the best of the kind of research I most love doing is to read about a place that has some ancient connection or some connection to the sky, some ancient cosmological tradition. And then I go there and experience it. So it's kind of like a combination of some knowledge about it and then going and experiencing it. And over the years, shamanic astrology has become, well, not entirely, but you know, since I basically was the founder of the school, many of the transmissions that are taught in the school, but not limited to this, have come from my own favorite interests, which are Scotland and Ireland, pre-Celtic Northern Europe understandings, Polynesia, and then Native American, Southwest, and Mesoamerican traditions, the weaving together of those three. Obviously, there's this knowledge from all parts of the world, and I'll soon get to be able to integrate more about Africa, South Africa. So there's a way of connecting astrology that works for people today, that connects back with pre-horoscopic traditions. Now, here's what I mean by that. This whole thing of having a chart, your own personal chart, date, time, place, and having your own personal natal chart, is fairly recent. That actually only started in Hellenistic times. It was during that time period in history when, if you look at it astrologically, Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto were conjunct. Rajar felt that was the significant of it. And that's a really rare outer planet combination. In fact, the next one, I think, isn't until like in the 3000s. And so the view would be symbolically that that combination was the thing that happened around the world the beginning, really, of individual Enlightenment practices. Before that, we had oral traditions, clans, culture, a whole group. If you go back to the way it was in Neolithic and pre-Neolithic, you would have people who do the cave painting. They had an entirely different understanding about how human beings are. They didn't have the same concept around death. You know, a painting would take 1,000 years. And so you would wake up into a life and continue the painting. Then you'd go to sleep. So there was an understanding of the continuity of life, death, and so on. But around 500, 600 BC, then comes this new way of looking at things. So the Buddha, Lao Tzu, Zoroaster, Pythagoras, Socrates, Plato. Obviously these outer planet combinations are not just a couple of years. It's just a certain time period in history. And then comes this new view of individual enlightenment. Now, what's happened, not that I'm being negative or critical about, you know, the individual chart, it's added a huge amount of insight into our journey as human beings. But in some cases, we've gone too far. By going so far into individual charts, we've lost the connection to clan, family, tribe, and ultimately the planet herself. So by going back and getting some of the insights that came that the ancients had regarding working with the land and the sky, the solstices and the equinoxes, the moon cycle, in a particular experiential way, and combine that with individual charts, then we can come up with some kind of a synthesis for building a new world. In some of the other features of shamanic astrology, there's a whole thing we do with the synodic cycles, which is the Venus cycle, Mars cycle, and Mercury cycle, which is understanding the larger cycle. The Venus cycle of 584 days, the Mars cycle of 26 months, and so on. And then you have your own individual story that's within a larger story. So, like, if I'm born somewhere in the 584-day Venus cycle, then my own personal story is within a larger story. And we begin to connect the stories, and rather than it just simply being a broad stroke of everybody or just the individual chart, what about me? You know, so the two get merged together. That's really part of the project that we're engaged in here. And, you know, so I'm liking to use the word Renaissance a lot these days. And the word Renaissance, in fact, several of our workshops are called Renaissance of the Sacred Feminine. Well, what is Renaissance? It means rebirth, but it means going back in order to rebirth. So it's going back to capture the nuggets from the past to assist in dreaming an entirely new world. Renaissance of the Sacred Feminine, Renaissance of astrology. It's honoring the best from the past in order to activate the imagination and our capacity to sense into the new mysteries that are coming through.
What about the other use of the word Renaissance when you say, like, a Renaissance man, when you're referring to someone who does it all? Does that tie in with how you use it?
Well, that meant someone who was doing what I'm describing, and we're just including all fields. You know, so there is that element of it also, which is not being a specialist.
Yeah.
You know, so one of the things, if you go to my library, I actually have more archaeoastronomy books than I do astrology books. More books on history than I do on astrology. Because what's happened is that things have become so specialized that the majority of astrologers don't know the sky. The majority of astronomers, believe it or not, don't know the sky either. There's this famous story of one of our students who got so excited about coming to one of our workshops because she learned where Mars was and knew something about the Mars cycle. And so she went to a talk at a planetarium from a famous astronomer. And following the lecture, he's walking to her car, his car, and she sees him, and she goes up and says, "Hi, I really enjoyed that. Wow, there's Mars." And he looks, "How do you know?" You know, it's like he didn't even know that's where Mars was, because they're so specialized, like, and let's look at a certain area of deep space, you know, and lose their contact with the senses. Which brings up another factor. Not that there's any judgment against the use of technology here at all, but we're trying to use a form of astrology that would work at any time period in history, whether you have technology or not. So therefore, we're mainly looking at naked eye, what our senses can experience. Now, the devil's advocate out there could say, well, if the basis of astrology is as above, so below, as within, so without, well, is it not true the invisible part of the spectrum is also part of the same as above, so below? Of course, absolutely. You know, so Pluto connects. The things we don't see connect. However, I think human beings are designed to connect with all of the mysteries without cybernetic or technological enhancement. That our senses are set up in such a way for us with this planet, with DNA, with earth and sky, to be able to sense into the entirety of the mysteries. Which doesn't mean that if you have a particular interest in cybernetic enhancement and technological approaches, that you shouldn't do that. It's kind of like a neo-Luddite version of astrology. You all know who the Luddites were? The Luddites were people in the 1820s in the British Isles who discovered that with the invention of the steam engine, that the way of life of the villages and the people was destroyed. People had a lot of leisure time. People did their weaving and their planting and family. They were together as a family and so on. And then comes the steam engine. Their ways of life were destroyed, and the only way they could survive was to get a job in the factory. And that destroyed their family life and their free time and everything else. So the Luddites decided to be revolutionaries, and they went out for about 20 years until they were bloodily suppressed to destroy the steam engines. And that was like this become famous in the language as the Luddites. Well, a neo-Luddite is not against technology. But a neo-Luddite says, if you're going to use technology, have an apprenticeship with nature first. So that's kind of like, this is neo-Luddite astrology. If you're going to be an astrologer, then be willing to be interested in the sky and the seasons and the cycles and the stars and, you know, to tune into it experientially. And then if you're really into doing telescopes and all of that, well then fine. But it's an enhancement, but it's not absolutely necessary. Good. Now, just to change track a little bit. This type of astrology has attempted to eliminate certain biases and judgments that come into mainstream astrology. If you go and learn astrology, not from Kaylin, she's not going to teach you the stuff that I'm going to talk about now, which is if you go to Astrology 101, then one of the first things I want to teach you are things like rulerships, exaltations, detriments, and it gives you this view that certain positions are better than others. That, you know, like even in astrology conferences I go to, people are kind of embarrassed, or their face drops when they have to say, well, somebody will say, "What's your moon?" "Virgo." "I have Venus in Virgo, I'm sorry." You know, like, back in the 1970s, in these schools, in these conferences, there would be glamour signs. And then there'd be the ones that were considered to be too bad for you. And in the 70s, the glamour sign was Aquarius. Everybody wanted to be Aquarius. And all the sort of disparagement was reserved for Virgo and some, to a certain extent, Scorpio. But at least there's a certain notoriety to Scorpio, you know, dangerous, you know. But now, interestingly, what's happened in astrological conferences, the one that you don't want to be these days, every joke is made against it, is Libra. Poor Libra. You know, like, too bad for you that you have this Libra stuff. But I'm trying to get away from that. And so actually, back then, the way maybe I have a little bit of Gemini in me, Tomas, I started making the jokes against Aquarius. The Aquarian types never got it. You know, so I would say stuff like, what is the shadow of Aquarius? What is the shadow of Aquarius? And they wouldn't be able to say anything, because the shadow of Aquarius is the belief there is no shadow. Yes. Or they don't get that. And then the other would be is that why do Aquarians all believe completely in universal love? Answer. Because it's a good idea. And you see, of course it is. I mean, it truly is. But it's an entirely different way into it than, say, the Pisces approach or the Cancer approach, you know, where it's appealing. You know? whichever way you take to get there is fine. But I was just trying to make it more balanced, you know. The Aquarians are not going to get away with this, you know. But we'll have a whole section here about Virgo. So I became 20 or 30 year project in order to bring Virgo back into self love and self appreciation. Because virtually no one in at current times really got the essence of it, particularly the male writers who were writing about their great difficulty in understanding women with a lot of Virgo. Anyway, so this way of eliminating hierarchy, that there's a value to every place on the wheel of life. One is not better than another. So there is a starting point in this work, which is that we have to be willing to question cultural views of right and wrong, good and bad, cultural views of masculinity and femininity, cultural views of how family structure should operate. Everything. We could look at every one of the 12 mystery schools, and it's suggesting that we have to rethink their foundation. Why? Because the essence of the mystery school is not the same as the content of the mystery school. So we say the Cancer is about family. Well, then if people think, well, family means a nuclear family of the Western model, then they're missing a huge part of what that's content, not essence. Or if we talk about relationship, well, let's say talk about Libra. And everybody, what comes to people's mind is like everybody finding the soulmate and bond for life. Well, that's one possibility. One place on the wheel. So we're valuing all the places on the wheel of life. Now, I can remember, actually, for me, what started the whole thing. When I was a teenager, for a variety of reasons, on a personal level, I can tell those stories at other time, but I felt alienated. I did not feel like those that appeared to be heroes of the game. And then all of a sudden, I began to notice, when I would get to know the people who were the heroes of the game, where their vulnerabilities were. Which developed in me the glimmerings, the early glimmerings of compassion. where I could see where their wounds were. And of course, I was aware that I had plenty. And so if I could establish a template that sees the vulnerabilities and the wounds of everyone, then we're all in the circle together. And then, wow, amazingly, I had this insight. Then it's a place for me in the circle. Wow. Which is a liberizing what it is I most wanted, which is have a place in the circle myself. So the Shamanic Astrology Mystery School, as far as putting everybody around the wheel and having this inquiry into the nature of the different mystery schools, is a way of valuing all the places on the wheel. But not in a light polarized way. A way that actually is also being honest about where the shadow is in each of the 12, or the expansion of the 12, which are the 24 gods and goddesses. Because hidden in the shadow of each of them are the gifts of each of those places on the wheel. So we're entering into a space of investigation here that is going to require suspending, or looking at where your own judgments may be regarding how certain things are, quote, supposed to be. And actually, in these particular gatherings, and I think Kaylin can attest to this, we always come up with new material. It's like the way the gods and goddesses are dancing now are such an... we don't know what's going to happen next. We truly don't. Now, I want to take this to sort of the best possible way to be objective with this. And I love saying this to astrology groups, but particularly astrologers, you know, people who are professional astrologers or astrology groups. And that is that astrology is the highest of the lower mysteries. The highest of the lower mysteries. You know, then you see some of the astrologers start, what are you talking about? What do I mean by the higher mysteries? Things like, so how does self-realization actually happen? How does one actually fully get self-love? What is the nature of grace? Certainly grace is not something that you can figure out or earn. What is the nature of surrender? If surrender was accessible by a technique, then it wouldn't be surrender. So there are higher mysteries that astrology cannot get you there. The lower mysteries, of course, include things like physics, the sciences. Recently, they've tried to include economics. But anyway, there's any number of different ways, fields of study. But astrology, known to the ancients, is the highest of the lower mysteries because it includes everything. Everything we can include. I mean, even if you're going to talk about divination, it's without question the best of all the divinations because it includes the greatest number of factors. It's not just a mandala like drawing a card. It includes place and time, very specific. And in the past, to be an astrologer, it meant you knew the other things. You knew the sciences, you knew astronomy, and things like that. So it was like the culmination of science was to get to astrology. But it was not the higher mysteries. So this actually leads us, from a spiritual and psychological level, to something that I have to say, the longer I do astrology, this becomes more and more clear. Even the best astrologer on the planet has no idea what's going to happen next. It's not possible. And I'll tell you the reason why it's not possible. Did any of you get a chance to look at the translation of the Emerald Tablet? Anyway, this one of the ways of the perennial philosophy, which is this experience we're having right now. The one reality that we're part of. The one reality. I don't know how else to say it. Call it God if you want. I mean, you know, the thing we're in here, the one reality, it has certain essences to it. One of its essences is that it has a, quote, pattern, capital P pattern. It also has a plan. It unfolds in a particular way. Most people who are into divination or into astrology find getting close to the perception of that plan, close to the kinesthetic of that plan, to be a turn-on. I mean, it's, wow, to actually sense into how this thing is unfolding and moving and changing. Not everybody has that same... You know, they might have their turn on in other areas. But to be astrologers or people who are into this kind of stuff, don't have to be an astrologer, there's a certain exquisite flavor to getting close to how it's happening. But no astrologer, even the best in the world, can know how it's really happening. Why? Because the astrologer is part of that unfolding. You cannot be on the outside looking in. You're part of the thing that's unfolding. So true objectivity is in fact not possible. Which means the whole thing of astrologer trying to predict something is foolishness to the extreme. However, having said that, based on history, just like we cannot know for sure when the next hurricane is coming, but a meteorologist is going to study history and have some clues about it. An astrologer has looked at human history, and hopefully if they've kept up with the times and are looking to see what's happening to people today, you can still get close enough to be able to help people, you know? It's like, why are you... trying to have as many partners as possible when in fact the chart would suggest that you'd be happiest if you found one person to be with, for example. Or why are you working in an office? You say you are miserable, that you're unhappy. It's the only way you can make money, but according to this chart, you really need to be outside more. One way or another, you're going to have to get there. So these are the kinds of clues you can tell because everyone has a different kind of script. Or, you know, someone is like, they cannot figure anything out. It's like they lie in bed at night and they see arrayed in front of them multiple lines of probability. And they cannot get anything to come into focus. It can be an unbelievable relief to know you're in a Neptune cycle. You know, where it's like, yeah, this is what happens in this cycle. Give yourself permission to be in it. This is not the time when you're supposed to be clear about anything. Or you find yourself just smoldering on the inside. You just want to explode. You want to blow something up. Sort of reminds me back 25 years ago, you might remember this, Joan, when it became popular there for a while in psychology, you know, get your anger out. Yeah. And so people would practice on each other. You know?
terminal screening.
Well, but that was done in a therapeutic sense. But I mean, it's like, you know, I'm pissed off at you, you know. And so it's all literalized, you know, which is, of course, not particularly useful.
Great damage.
But there's still important, you have to figure out ways to release that in a healthy way. Ah, go do some breath work. You know, go do primal strength screening or something, you know. So there, depending on what cycle you're in, there can be different techniques. Well, meanwhile, there could be someone, you know, there's people like this that are always coming to workshops, you know. Life is fantastic. Everything is working. I am at the crest wave. It's never been like this for my life ever before. They are assuming it's going to be like that forever. We know as astrologers that we have what are called cycles of change. And it's not particularly rational. If you happen to be in a Jupiter cycle and everything is working, it's not necessarily logical that it's followed by the higher octave of that. You could be in an amazing place. You've just done unbelievable work on yourself. You've got to your core issues. You have space all around you. Everything is possible. And then you happen to go into an underworld cycle. What the hell is going on? Did I deserve this? Well, this is why part of the Plutonian work is the fact that it's not a punishment. It's now maybe your strength of soul is enough that you can now handle the underworld journey. Underworld journeys never happen because it's a punishment. It's because you're ready for it. Or it happens to be what's coming next. And that's also a huge value of this kind of astrology. It's not a linear process. It's like spirals, cycles of change. Now, I'm just giving you some of the background and backdrop on this approach. So I want to just maybe use the next few minutes, since we do have newcomers and, you know, new people to the circle for shamanic astrology. And before you get into the left brain, figuring out the elements, and figuring out how to look at the chart, what the heck is this piece of paper and what is it trying to show? Questions. Anything involving the background, the philosophy, the reason we're doing all this. Absolutely anything. Particularly the newcomers to the shamanic astrology approach. Philosophical or practical? Yeah.
So, as I understand it, what you were saying is shamanic astrology really is Daniel Kimmerer.
The shamanic astrology is that whole lineage of that I spoke out last night.
I understand,
yeah.
But it's you're the one that's created the
synthesized.
Yeah,
it all
I said this. Yeah,
1,000-year painting. It's just doing one thing. Yeah, it was there when you synthesized it.
Yes, yes, and it blends together pre-horoscopic traditions with a way of taking away the judgments, positive, negative, that come from, unfortunately, the mainstream approach. I mean, for those that have any background in other kinds of astrology, it's actually been quite a disappointment to me what has happened in the astrological community. In the early 70s, through maybe the mid-70s, the leading edge of astrology was humanistic astrology. It was part of the human potentials movement, quite frankly. And now, basically, the leading edge of astrology, fortunately, it's kind of like everything in the world today. There's not just one thing. I mean, there's so many, everything is available. But most of the leading astrologers have gone back to, not pre-Hellenistic, but they've gone back to medieval astrology. and are working with astrology that is heavily deterministic, good, bad, right, wrong, just using some of the old ways of looking at it, which were highly deterministic. I had a person who knew the medieval techniques who did a reading for me at one point. He said, I want to do a reading for you, Daniel, using these old techniques. First thing he said to me is, Daniel, you have a maximum allotment of Saturn. There's no way anyone could have more Saturn than you. And he said that based on what I've learned from this, they never would have done a reading for you. Because they would have assumed you wouldn't have made it past age 5. Yeah, that really worked, didn't it? So I don't understand. I don't know whether it's because people got older, their hearts closed, they lost the idealism, they lost the dream of the human potentials movement and the idealism that could be associated with the human journey. I don't know what happened, but it's kind of been a disappointment to me. But then I've always made those mistakes on the side of idealism. I was in those years in college. I thought by 1970 the world was, we're going to change the world. You know? I mean, gee, all you have to do is go to college and you're going to open your mind to global consciousness. 5 years later, I realized, yikes, even people who are doing LSD are getting a different experience, you know? There's different time periods in history that generate different kinds of insights. So, having said that, just one quick thing. Because this is the point where we're just kind of opening the space for this larger view. The Uranus-Pluto square that's happening now, from 2012 to 2015, the last time anything quite like this happened was 1965 to 1968. The time before that was 1930 to 1934. Plus, it was hugely active at the time of the French Revolution. So we are in those times again. Yep, excuse me.
You were saying that a couple thousand years ago there was a shift towards personal enlightenment, and that a lot of astrology has been based on kind of this personal fulfillment on a certain level. And I think that that's been my experience too, even with this form of astrology, that, you know, there's this heavy emphasis on what does my chart say? What? Tell me more about me, you know? And I've experienced with you coming out to our communities, you actually using shamanic as an astrology as a tool to actually strengthen the bonds and understandings within the community. And I'm just, my question is how are you using, or how do you propose that we use shamanic astrology as a tool to kind of move away from this individualistic mentality and actually create more of this tribal, communal kind of structure?
Well, just as when I had the opportunity to do that for your schools, for your communities, well, we're doing that right here.
Yes.
We're trying to do that here. And by having as many people who are familiar with these techniques to whether they are doing, you know, they have their formal practice. I'm an astrologer, and I'm doing 5 clients a day, and I'm making my living doing it. To integrate this view into all the other things people are doing on a very wonderful level, you know, whether they're coaches, therapists, workshop leaders, people in your position, you know, who run a community, is to have some of these tools available and take it into, for those that are really into this, you know, to take it into the boardroom, take it into everywhere, you know, so that there's a way of valuing all the places on the wheel of life, but most importantly, also to see the interconnections between people. By the time we get done with these days, because we're going to be working with individual charts in the group, too, you'll be able to see connection, specific connection points between people in the group. For example, I have a Capricorn moon, and I would have a natural connection with people with Capricorn rising. There's a transmission that happens there. Those that have a lot of Sagittarius, for example, are going to have major connections with Joan, who is very strong with Sagittarius and Leo, the Leo connections with her. There's going to be in our circle the Taurus connections. B will be, and Adrian will have certain strong Taurian connections, transmission points. And I'm not speaking here about having the same sun sign. And before we complete this segment, I almost entirely forgot to mention, and this is, I think, important to mention to those that are coming into the circle for the first time, shamanic astrology is not emphasizing sun signs. For those of you who don't know, this whole fashion of sun signs, and it really is a fashion, and it started in the 1800s. There were a couple of people who had an idea they could sell a newspaper column by dividing people up by easily discernible date ranges. Now, to be fair about it, I mean, that was the time period in history. You might be one person in an entire city who had the books available in order to be able to figure stuff out, you know, like where the rest of the chart is. It wasn't readily known. So it popularized astrology in a very superficial way. Early on, I mean, way back in the early 1970s, I began to notice that that sun sign astrology wasn't particularly helpful or useful. We'll get into many examples of this as we go through this workshop. Which is not to say we devalue the sun. The sun is where everything is measured off from. It locates us in time. Also, in terms of the experiential mysteries, the sun is the only thing in nature that you can't look at for too long and have to turn away. I look at the sun as a direct manifestation of great mystery. It is great mystery in its strongest, most concentrated experiential form. So we're not devaluing the sun, but we place a lot of the mysteries, lineage, what god or goddess, what place on the wheel of life are you here to investigate? You're not going to get much clue from the sun sign there. The only exception are going to be women who have sun and Venus in the same sign, or men who have sun and Mars in the same sign, as we'll see as we go through these days. So it's very important. In fact, maybe we should have a Mary, we should have a way of give everybody in the circle a homeopathic dose of what you went through. You know, to just clear the file of sun sign prejudices. You know,
I find that with a lot of people that I introduce to shamanic astrology, what I come up against is that they've internalized their sun sign for 20 plus years. So for 20, like I did, for 20 plus years, I went around saying I'm a Pisces,
right,
even though it's only on my sun and ascendant, you know? And I, for whatever reason, internalized a lot of the Pisces mentality, and I actually feel a strong allegiance with Pisces, you know, and be it that I was just internalizing it or for whatever reasons, but, you know, it actually became a part of my psychological environment, you know, after internalizing it for so many years. And I'm wondering how you, when you come up against that, you know, because it seems like I come up against it a lot, you know.
Well, it actually, in some ways, becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And particularly with the sun signs that people have very strong opinions about how they are. Now, I think that if you're, just to give an example here, Kaylin probably has some good things she can say about this, which is, you know, the Venus in Aries, sun in Pisces, so it's not like saying the sun sign is meaningless.
Mm-hmm.
Like if a person has Venus in Aries, and who in our group, I'm thinking here, I believe, so you have sun in Venus and Aries.
No, it's
yes.
Sun in Aquarius, Venus and Aries.
Right.
Venus, Venus.
Right. So, if once you get clear about Venus and Aries, then you can see that Venus and Aries burning Pisces fuel or burning Aries fuel or burning Aquarius fuel are different. Mm-hmm. But it's still important, just as you've known since we've been working together, how important the Mars position is for you. So it's part of it is to actually remove the belief that that's entirely who you are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then to be able to use that as your fuel or as your food for which particular archetype you have.
It's not getting rid of it totally. It's
no.
Just taking it off the top shelf.
Correct.
I hit it with a pen.
And the other... you need to make an announcement? I'll be done in a moment. Okay. I'm just wrapping it up. Just watch the habit of your mind when we're going through the mystery schools and try to get into the essence of it and not relate it to somebody's sun sign. That's all I'm going to suggest at this particular point. All right. Any last questions, and we'll take a break. And
it's a very lonely question.
Yes.
But do you believe we can be? I went through a very powerful rebirth, and a lot of people say to me, initiation was 16 years ago today. But a lot of people say I've got a lot of Pisces in me, which I haven't. I haven't got a lot of water at all. And that I would have, as this rebirth, I would have. And what do you think about that? Like when you've had a really, really powerful initiation, and you've actually.
This is actually something that this afternoon and tonight we're going to go into in great depth. We're going to be getting into the script and the way the moon and rising sign operate together. just a very short answer at the moment. Many people, not all, are run by their moon position for a long period of time. The goal is not to kill the moon. It's to get it to work for current life purpose theme.
But this rebirth, I would have had a totally different chart.
Oh, that's what you're asking.
Right.
Oh.
She has the Pisces job,
mm-hmm.
and the
Virgo tribe.
And the Capricorn tribe is her new mystery school. And she also has Pisces at the home and roots.
Yeah. No, so part of it, this is a... I'm going to do a very short... I've had clients in the past that have asked me that. I don't discount that walk-in chart or rebirth chart. We can use it as a major transit event in your life. I do not see much sense in having ignoring the original chart. It's really the transformation of the original chart.
It's as if you're imprinted where the planets were at the moment of birth on your physical body. And so that's always with you no matter what. And there's an intention that's connected to that. And understanding that intention, those experiences like what you had can be enhanced by understanding the intention of the basic birth chart.
Okay, that's it for the...